Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 131. This is our 2020 US Open course research preview. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have US Open champion punter, Barry O'Hanrahan, who landed Gary Woodland at Pebble Beach last year. Hello there, Barry. How are you?
Hello. Good memories. God, it's a little bit over a year, but I'd love to catch just a slice of that magic again and pull another big one out.
What was the price?
100-1. Well, I had him on Betfair and in the bookies, so I had him. It was a little bit shorter with the bookies, and that was a fun old week, a very fun week. Gary Woodland bought me some new golf clubs and some golf gear. He doesn't know it, but he's one of my favorite
new
people.
Car and yeah. It was all good.
Yeah, I mean, God, try catch that one again. It'd be nice. So,
golf betting can be a very cruel mistress, can't it? But it can really pay off sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just finding that balance and hope you end up on the black side of things rather than the red at the end of the day or the end of the year. So.
Visit Golf Betting System with betting previews containing tips, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media. On Twitter, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. We're up to 5,500 golf punters and players in that group, so come along. Please look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Of course, there will be a US Open tips preview next Monday. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. I've got a couple here. First one from Con Bo, and he's in Great Britain. Title, great podcast. I just had to write another review! He's given us 5 stars. I've been listening to this podcast for nearly 2 years now. Unfortunately, I missed some due to work commitments. I always look forward to listening to the new podcast each week. I love all of the insight about each tournament. The hard work all of you put in really shows. I love your podcast. Well, thank you very much for that, Con Bo.
That's awesome. We all suffer from the same thing. There's a lot of podcasts out there these days and life is busy, so you don't get to them all. But, it's nice that you do the little short YouTube videos as well. And there's the written previews too to just get that snapshot of what we talk about on the pod.
Plenty to consume each week, Barry. Absolutely. And then I've got one here from Ireland. This is from GMCTR. And he's titled this Quality Podcast, 5 stars, top-notch analysis and tipping, won a USPGA sweepstakes this past weekend, following the same line of approach taken by the guys. Great work, thank you.
Outstanding, great news.
So, without more of a miss, should we talk about the US Open?
Yes, please.
That's the idea, isn't it? I don't know about you. I mean, I never really... How do I put this? Pebble Beach and I've had some winners there at the AT&T. I struggle with it a little bit there around there. I don't know why. And I never really got overly excited about last year. Now, clearly, you scored 100-1 winner and fantastic work it was as well. But I like the way that what you used your logic last year to find the winner. And there are some really pertinent points that I've already uncovered and dug out that we can go through with the listeners about exactly what kind of trends we want to be seeing from players going into this week, what kind of skills we want the players to be mastering as they arrive in New York this week, and also I want to really hunker down this on this podcast in terms of the course, because as we were just talking off mic, this is an absolute beautiful golf course and a unique golf course. It really is. It reminds me of Oakmont 2016, a traditional old style golf course that can just eat you up for breakfast.
Yeah, definitely with the fast, slopey greens. Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there will be a vibe of Oakmont, and I remember the rough there being particularly lush and juicy, and a very, very stern challenge for the players that day. And unfortunately, for the Irish side of me, Shane Lowry came a cropper to it on the Sunday. But let's get on to Winged Foot. I mean, I don't know the things I'm hearing about it and feeling, the feelings I'm getting just from looking at it and reading about it. It's almost like this is it feels to me like it could be a Merion, but with like just beefed up on length.
Yeah.
Everybody thought they would tear Merion apart when it was raining that week, and it just, it challenged them like nobody could expect, I don't think. Maybe a few on the inside of Merion who really knew how that place is, but it's going to be... I mean, we can talk about what skills you need for this course. I mean, if you're going to be in the top 10 or top 20, you need all of your skills to be firing at like max capacity, from what I can see. And any weaknesses, you'll be just very badly exposed.
I think there is one danger with the US Open. And I think the danger with the US Open is we're used to it. We're already seeing it on Twitter. We're already seeing it on social media. Just continual videos and images about the length of rough. And people thought, oh, it's 5 inches. It's 5.5 inches. I found some rough here. It's 8 inches. It's all out of control. And it's very easy to take a US Open and think, well, actually, I need a really accurate driver of the golf ball. Because as soon as they're going into this kind of rough, it's bogey or double bogey at best. The trouble with that strategy is when you actually look at the list of US Open winners recently, you don't exactly see many short hitters on there, do you? You know, Justin Rose in 2013 at Merion, as you mentioned, a nice... 300 plus driver of the golf ball. Dustin Johnson in 2016, an absolute beast off the tee. 2018 and 2017, of course, Brooks Koepka. And, last year, Gary Woodland, a fantastic driver of the golf ball, extremely long off the tee. For me, it's not all about accuracy off the tee. It's that total driving. It's all about those strokes gain metrics off the tee that we're looking for. And it's all very easy to think US Open Jim Furyk types. And I think that can be something that is very easy to get sucked into. The other thing this year in particular, and this is completely anti what we saw last year at Pebble Beach, I just think these green... There's a fantastic YouTube video out there that Andy Johnson has pulled together for the... Fried Egg podcast, and I've tweeted it out again this afternoon. I urge viewers and listeners to go and watch it. It's a great video, 10 minutes, and it just goes through this golf course at Winged Foot, and it's entitled the video "Beautiful and Scary." The golf course itself has had a Gil Hanse restoration since the 2004 US Open they held here. Oh, sorry, 2006 US Open they held here. But they ask both Hanse and Ogilvy, how would you best describe the greens? And they both come back with the same word, treacherous. Ogilvy chips in, they're scary. Severely pitched greens, there's false fronts all over the golf course. They're contoured and can't, from back to front, all over the... And they all sit pronounced, don't they, Barry? The greens themselves are always above the fairways.
Yeah.
They're just the weirdest looking green complexes you'll see on, I've seen in my experience. And they just look fantastic. And that, to me, kind of says that this US Open... more than maybe, say, Pebble Beach was last year, could be far more about short game, up and down, strokes gained around the green and fantastic lag putting and keeping the ball below the hole. A real strategy to it this year at Winged Foot. What do you think?
Yeah, there's certainly things that are kind of popping my head for what feels like the kind of test they're going to get, which will be a... level par being that target, or barely achievable target, somewhere in around that. it's that inside kind of 10-foot putting, you know, how good are you at just holding those out and saving those crucial par putts? You know, we see that at Augusta as well. You get those slightly longer. You can tend to get those slightly longer putts for par. It feels like there'll be a little bit of that aspect to it. And certainly, there's been some analogies made to the way the greens are at Augusta with these sections and large slopes and playing the ball in off these slopes. And these greens do have quite defined sections in them as well. So. Yeah. They're going to give opportunities to players to get the ball in close, but you're also taking on a risk by trying to get the ball in close, because if you miss that little section, you really are in trouble then. So
there's going to be some, and this again was on that actual piece that I'm describing, treacherous two putts if you're not on the same level, level. And like you said, some of these greens feature up to, four different kind of ledges. And if you're on the wrong ledge and you're certainly coming downhill, you're in for it's nigh on impossible for some of these lag putts.
Yeah, I wonder, kind of the sick part of me wants to think that, you might see one or two guys taking wedges on the greens when they just feel like they're completely trapped with the putter. You might see one or two of those this week.
There's a story of Billy Casper winning around here in the past, and they were playing a certain par three, and he was actually not even going for the green on a par three. He was laying it up and then coming in with the pitch, because he said that it was impossible to get the ball close on the green itself if you came in from distance. That's crazy. I've never heard that in my life. He won the tournament, apparently.
But that's what a strong golf course can do to you. Like you can end up, thinking your way out, into fear and playing a bit scared. Now, obviously his strategy worked out quite well. He played to his strengths and, figured I could pitch and putt to get my pars on this hole. But it really does ask very, very demanding questions of the players, and it'll be the ones who can, not lose their cool that will be there Sunday evening.
Let's take the listeners through some detail. We're playing Winged Foot Golf Club. It's in Mamaroneck, which is about a 45-minute drive from central New York. It's off to the northeast. It's an A.W. Tillinghast original, and it received a Gil Hance restoration in 2016 into 2017. Now, this golf course itself has hosted 5 US Opens, a PGA Championship, that was back in 1997, the US Amateur in 1940 and 2004, and the most recent was the 2006 US Open that Jeff Ogilvie won. Now, the details are being firmed up. It now would appear that we're as per the scorecard, although hole lengths will change day by day, we're looking at a 7,477-yard par 70. Ouch. Just to put that into some context, Oakmont in 2016, which Dustin Johnson won, was a 7,255-yard par 70. So we've effectively got over 200 additional yards to what we saw at Oakmont in 2016. It's kind of wow. In terms of the course itself, the greens are around about 5,100 square feet, which isn't huge. The other key feature that I always highlight are that the greens are a perennial poana. So no bent grass mix in with them. They are perennial poana greens. So as we are aware, as regular golf punters, Barry, we know that there are many golfers out there that do not get on with poana whatsoever as a putting surface.
It's funny how that happens. I mean, I guess it's guys that kind of grew up in it maybe, or have played in it for a long time, just become accustomed to the fact that your ball's going to get knocked offline by you know, the grass seeds at some stage of the day, and you just kind of have to take the rough with the smooth. And so maybe it's a mentality thing more than anything else, and in just accepting that some putts will go in and some putts won't. And
completely agree.
You know, and it won't be your fault. You could have put a perfect putt on it, and it's just the look of the draw, and it's about how you deal with that.
I was listening to the No Laying Up podcast this week with Harry Higgs, and Higgs is up from he grew up around New York, and he was describing the fact that they were playing Silverado this week. Yes, the Safeway Open. He said they're Poana greens. Yeah, he said a lot of players can't get their heads around is that they'll hit a perfect putt, 10-foot putt, and for 9.5 feet of that 10-foot putt, it's bang on track, and then at the last minute it hits something and dives to the left or dives to the right and doesn't even hit the hole, and it just screws with a lot of players' minds. Those were kind of the words he was coming with. It's a mentality thing, isn't it?
It feels that way. I mean, I can't comment any further because I've never played on Poana.
Wouldn't it be great?
Well, to be debated, I guess. I'll come back to you if I ever get a chance. We can only kind of best guesstimates based on what we hear and read and see and experience through following golf and when it visits Poana courses, and hearing comments like that from somebody who's playing on tour, you know, like Harry Higgs, I guess, helps us a lot as punters. You know, you're looking for... That kind of guides me towards guys who are, you know, seem to be mentally stronger than others. You know, won't be bitching and moaning about things. So there's quite a few that will go straight on the X list. You know,
should we just say Dustin Johnson and curtail the podcast at this point, Joe? Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson's going to win.
What can you say about him at the moment? Or what can't you say? It's just phenomenal what he's been doing the last few weeks. Really incredible to watch. It's a privilege, to be honest.
Absolutely.
It would be astonishing if he's not thereabouts.
Too true. 7,477 yards. It's been described in content that I've read and put... I will... push people to Golf Betting System website. There's my full research preview available on the homepage right now. I'll just read a few comments here from Jeff Ogilvie. Now, Ogilvie won the 2006 US Open. He said, I still am not the straightest hitter in the world. My short game is pretty decent. I've been getting it up and down from everywhere this week, which is what you have to do. Your best day, you're going to hit 12 greens out here probably. I've been making a few more putts, I guess. Whenever anyone starts playing a little bit better, you always got to look at the probably holing one more 9-footer or one more 12-footer, and that's 4 shots. And that's quite a lot. Mentally, every time you have a nice round in a major or a nice result, you get a bit more confident the next time you play. And it's interesting with Ogilvie. He won this in 2006, and... just looking back at his record then, in that particular 2006 season, you don't see a whole plethora of top 10 finishes. What you do see is that he won that year the WGC World Match Play in February, which was his biggest tournament victory to that point. And in the season before, in 2005, at the PGA Championship, which they held at Baltusrol. Now, Baltusrol is another A.W. Tillinghast golf course in the New York area. He finished sixth. And again, you know, you can see that growth of a quality player that's just maturing, starting to find leaderboards in majors, then wins his first WGC. And hey, presto, 3 months later, comes to the US Open and he wins his first ever major championship. And that was kind of the rise of Jeff Ogilvie. Interesting in those comments, though, and he constantly mentions it again on the Fried Egg podcast. Short game. And another comment he says there, you have to be really, really good from within 100 yards. That's the quote of what he says to this golf course and actually mastering this golf course. It's that short game. It's approach from within 100 yards. I mean, you could have missed the fairway for a start and had to chip out. You've then got an up and down from within 100 yards for par. That could be one aspect. You're going to have on the par fives that kind of distance in with a wedge for your third shot. And of course, you're going to miss greens around here. So, and some of the stats that I've been looking at, it's not only scrambling, but it's scrambling from distance. So scrambling from 20 to 30 yards or scrambling from more than 30 yards. So you can get up and down from over 30 yards. I think that's going to be a really interesting stat to look at for this. And of course, interesting when you look at Ogilvy. This was a scenario where Ogilvy had got into... he shot five over, didn't he? And he was in the clubhouse. Yeah. And Mickelson was on the 18th tee with a two-shot lead, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And Monty was in the mix as well, wasn't he?
Monty needed to hit the green from the fairway.
And Monty didn't make the putt for birdie to make the playoff with Ogilvy, did he? And Lefty just lashes it left and he seriously mucks up the last hole and Ogilvy wins the tournament. And it's that kind of... But the thing with Ogilvy all week, he was absolutely inspired around the green. So I've just looked at Jeff Ogilvy and Phil Mickelson and what they'd been doing on the PGA Tour skill-wise before they arrived for the US Open. And they're very close on a number of categories. And it's fantastic you can do this on the PGA Tour website. You can actually go to the point where what their stats were when they were arriving at the golf course that particular week. Both Lefty and Jeff Ogilvy, for example, were in the top 30 for strokes gained putting at that point on the PGA Tour. Now, I don't think that's a fluke. They were in the top 40 for around the green, strokes gained around the green. And another fascinating angle, and this is what we were saying earlier about total driving, both Ogilvy and Lefty that season, as they were arriving in New York, were in the top 30 for total driving as a statistic. And I just think that those are angles to definitely look at. Ogilvy and Lefty, again, were within the top 60 for scrambling over 30 yards. And I just think they're angles potentially to look at. If from a statistical perspective, if you want to model out or build a spreadsheet around what kind of players at the moment would fill those criteria, strokes gained putting, around the green, total driving, scrambling from over 30 yards. That's the kind of angle I'm looking at for this week.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly feels like the total driving and the short game will be probably a little bit more weighted than, say, approach shots this week. I don't care how good your approach game is, you're still going to be missing greens.
12 out of 18, according to Jeff, yeah. So if you're running at 66%, yeah, that's going to be high GIR. That's 6, 12, 18, 24 times minimum you're going to be scrambling around this golf course.
It's big. And no matter how on point your irons are, I don't think you're going to give yourself that big a percentage of opportunities gained for birdies during the week because of these sectioned greens. You really need to get that ball into them in the right place, maybe under the hole as well. So a lot of the time is going to be spent just praying to get a nice easy 2-putt par, maybe sneak a birdie every now and again. I think the focus on that short game feels like the right kind of approach to take for now. Then again, we could come to the end of the tournament and be like completely wrong, but it's always the best guess at this stage.
Just for listeners, AW Tillinghast Designs around the Big Apple area. I mentioned Bolter's Roll. That held the 2005 PGA Championship, which I believe was won by... Was that the year Davis Love won? Potentially. Don't quote me on that.
I was just a baby back then, Steve.
So was I.
yeah, exactly. We all were.
But we will remember the 2016 PGA Championship won by Jimmy Walker at Bolter's Roll a few years ago. Another Tinhas design is Bethpage State Park, the black course, very infamous, and we've had a lot of recent tournament experience there. 2000 and 2009 US Opens. We had the 2019 PGA Championship, and we also had the 2012 and 2016 Barclays tournaments held there on the black course. And also Ridgewood Country Club. Now, that again is another horn of the PGA Tour event they play at New York every year. That hosted the 2010 and 2014 Barclays, and also the 2018 Northern Trust, which many of you will remember was won by one Bryson DeChambeau. So if you're looking for players that play well on Tillinghast golf courses in this particular area, look for Bolter's Roll, look for Bethpage Black, and also look for Ridgewood Country Club. I don't think you'd be a million miles away. Now, this particular course, in terms of Wing Foot, just wanted to quickly look at what kind of rainfall they'd had here. Because as you know, Paul, Barry, I'm on default with Paul. As you know, course conditions can be very much dictated by just the local weather. It was interesting, they were mentioning last week at the Tour Championship at Eastlake that Atlanta had experienced record amounts of rain in August, and they couldn't get the course as firm and the greens as fast as they usually did. And that was noticeable in the scoring early on in that. But coming back to Wing Foot, September so far, they've received just 22 millimetres of rain so far. In August, it was 73 millimetres. And in terms of this month, September, within the last week, they've just had 9 millimetres of rain, which was actually yesterday and into this morning.
Now, that's nothing.
Forecasts are forecasts. Yes, I know that. But if you actually look at the forecast, they're not forecasting any substantial rain between now and the start of the tournament and during the tournament. Wind, I mean, again, we're sitting here, 10 days before the tournament actually, 10 days before it ends, but a week before it starts.
Yeah.
However, there could be breezes potentially over the weekend, next weekend, up to 20 miles an hour. That's not really a breeze, that's getting quite strong. And you kind of put yourself in the USGA shoes, don't you? Now that Mike Davis has kind of stepped aside, what kind of target score would they like this week at Winged Foot? Because from what we've seen, from what you've seen, it's fairly obvious this course could really be set up to be as hard as you want it to be. Throwing 20 mile an hour winds.
And if the fairways are running a little bit, you know, balls just going through the corners into rough. Oh my God, greens are bouncing.
graduated rough. The USGA do that. But I've even read from people on the ground and from analysts over there that the USGA might be targeting up to 5.5-6 inches of rough in parts. So, yeah, if you miss the fairway a little bit, graduated rough, 1.5-2 inches. If you go beyond that, you're into 5.5-6 inch kind of stuff. Also, took on board some information about the course in terms of just how it looks, how it plays. And, again, I'll refer listeners to YouTube. There is a USGA video out there with all 18 holes and flyovers of those holes. Fantastic to watch. And you can just make some interesting notes from it. Notes that I've made on it. To me, and I've also read this on Twitter and had some feedback around this from guys that play the course regularly, it seems to be a course that's almost kind of going against what we've got used to on the PGA Tour recently, that actually favours a draw shot shape. And as we know now, with a lot of the top players, they prefer to fade the golf ball. John Rahm, Dustin Johnson, you know, it's an easy list to make. I just went through the course today on the flyovers, and to me, it looks like 7 holes fade a draw, and only 2 of the holes actually favour the fade off the tee. I'm talking par 4s and par 5s, yeah?
Just before I lose the point in my head,
yeah, of course.
With the graduated rough that they, you know, historically, you know, set up for many a year before, you know, their little jaunt off to like Chambers Bay and, you know, Pinehurst, this is going to be very interesting in that there's no crowds there this week to make that extreme miss maybe not so bad with the trample down rough. So genuinely, the further away from the target area you are, fairway and or greens, the more your punishment is going to be. You're not going to have those trample down areas where if you go 15 yards wide of the fairway, you're okay. So it's going to play as true as possible to what they wanted to play. And in that respect, it's probably the fairest that it's going to be. Sorry, it's hard to cut across you. Just I had to get that in before we disappeared down a different avenue.
I completely agree. Now, I just had a quick chat with Greg Ducharme last week, who hosts the First Cut podcast for CBS over in the States, and he's local to Wingfoot, and he plays the course fairly regularly. He confirmed that the greens are Poana, but a really interesting point, and a point that he continues to make on the podcast, he was even made it yesterday, is he thinks that this golf course seriously favours the draw. This is a guy that plays the course. And he said one of the reasons why that is, it's not just the shape of the holes, the fact that there are lots of, you know, dog legs to the left. It's also that a lot of the fairways themselves are canted. And what that works against the fade shot shape. And he said that if you're going to get firm and fast fairways, and looking at the weather forecast and the amount of rain that they've had, would suggest that they can get these fairways running. If you're hitting a lot of these holes with a fade shot shape, and you're then hitting a fairway that's still canted away from you and away from that, it's taking you into that rough on the right side of the hole, and it could be taking you into the really thick stuff, especially if you're miscalculating your tee shot or mishitting your tee shot. So I think it's really important to take this kind of information on board. He also mentioned that on some of the holes, it's not even that imperative to be in the fairway to such an extent. It depends on where clearly the hole is cut. It's sometimes best to be in the light or the lighter rough on the right side of the fairway to attack the pin on the opposite side of the green itself. I've also read that we could be seeing fairways as tight as 22 yards wide this week.
Oh my God.
And it's 7,477 yards to the tips. Wow. I must say, I don't think I've ever been so excited for a major as this.
This is going to be pretty special.
I think so.
Yeah. So like in terms of golfers who are, let's say, popping your head for drawing the golf ball, you know, at that like higher level, let's say ones that will come into my head would be Patrick Reed, Tommy Fleetwood. Like you'd put Bubba in there as a lefty and Phil as a lefty because they'll be fading the ball. Whether Bubba's got the mental fortitude to deal with the US Open test remains to be seen. And probably, you know, until he proves otherwise, I'd say that it's just not one for him. Phil could be anything. Honestly, winning the Champions Tour there a few weeks ago, he's playing decent enough golf, you could argue. He's gone back to a place where he was close to success. Albeit 14 years ago, but you know, he's got the distance. Is there that fairy tale story for Phil getting the US Open win?
Not for me personally. You forgot, I mean, I've always had Shane Lowry down as a good draw with a golf ball. Another player towards the top of the market whose stock shot is the draw, and that kind of makes him almost unfashionable these days, is one Xander Schauffele. He's a draw with a golf ball. This is the point. A lot of the top, and we also haven't mentioned one Rory McIlroy. But a lot of the top guys now, they hit the fade, you know, a regular amount of time off the tee. That is their preferred shot shape. And yeah, they can hit draws. I mean, these are the best players in the world, but clearly, You know, what kind of space does this put Tiger Woods in this week? You know, because Woods can move the ball whatever way he wants to. He's always been absolutely fantastic off the tee and being able to, you know, just move the ball in any of those nine quadrants they talk about in terms of shot shape and, you know, height. You know, maybe Woods could be a factor this week if he can hit enough requisite fairways, because his approach play since he's come back has been very, very good. It's been more about the putting that's the problem with Tiger, and on these greens that could be a fatal blow, I suppose. If you haven't got confidence with the putter, coming to some of the trickiest putting surfaces that we've seen for a long, long time. I'm trying to think of other drawers of the golf ball and failing dismally. I did think Webb Simpson, but I just genuinely think that Webb Simpson at a 7,500-yard par 70 just isn't going to be long enough off the tee. And I just don't fancy him on Poana greens. Makes you wonder why I put a bet on him a few weeks ago, but we won't go down that road. It was a small bet. I blame the fact it was early in the morning.
It'll be interesting to see. You know, these guys, obviously guys, they don't seem to care about the shape of their ball flight too much anymore. They'll just, you know, they'll play their stock shape rather than trying to shape the ball with the hole. Mm-hmm. Be interesting to see if there's any guys who'll just dial it back with a 3-wood to try ensure getting the fairway, or if they just wail away on it and get it as far down as possible. Like they seem to do quite regularly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they seem to do quite regularly these days. They just suck it up that I'd rather be further down and in the rough than, you know, a little bit shorter and still possibly missing the fairway.
Yeah, I can see that. Another one on my records that's a predominant draw of the golf ball is Louis Oosthuizen, who we know is a fantastic player at majors. When he pops up and can be bothered, Louis a draw of the golf ball.
But yeah, Neiman draws it a bit as well. He can move it both ways.
Jokin, yeah. I think if you're a confident mover of the golf ball both ways, it won't be a problem. But if, you know, I watch some of these pro tracer videos that you can get quite readily now on YouTube, and you watch even some of the very best players, and they're asked to draw a golf ball if and they struggle. I mean, I watched some John Rahm shots recently, and he was having, I'm trying to remember what the golf course was. Might have been Olympia Fields. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was the FedEx St. Jude a while ago. And there was one hole where he had to draw it off the tee, and it was just wild. Absolutely wild. And then for the rest of the time, with his fade, he was hitting every fairway. It just makes you wonder, especially if this is a test where they've got those firm fairways and you have got this uniqueness about it where so many of these fairways are tilting against the fade shot shape. It could be a kind of factor that you need to take a real view on. That was my view on it. So, yeah, I mean, weather-wise, it looks to me as if the USGA really will be able to set it up however they want to. You know, it's not going to be wet. The temperatures are going to be around that 23, 27 degrees, both in the build-up and during the tournament. And breeze, you know, wind-wise, Friday looks fairly calm at the moment. Thursday, Friday, there's nothing major to report. But if this front does come in on the Saturday and all of a sudden we're talking 15 to 20 mile an hour winds, they might have to get the hoses out and actually calm those green surfaces down a little bit.
Yeah, I think they've kind of, over the last few years, they've proven they've sort of learned their lesson about letting golf courses go. And I mean, the closest they got might have been was Shinnecock a couple of years back. Yeah. You know, and Phil with his putting it, you know, putting the ball that was moving. But I mean, they only probably lost that by an hour or two. Mm-hmm. And if you could argue whether they lost it at all, you know, it was on the edge. But I think I think we're just going to see them probably nail it. You know, they've got complete control of it by, you know, if the weather forecast stays the same and the way it has been in the build up, they do have complete control of the course. And if they pull it off, it should be a phenomenal major to watch.
It should be excellent. Must be. As I said, I think, you know, from a punting perspective and a viewing perspective, and the fact that it's on the east coast of America this time around, we're not going to be sitting up over here in the UK till 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning.
That helps.
It helps that we can just sit there with a cup of cocoa on Sunday evening and actually watch the tournament to its end quite comfortably.
I think from a punting perspective, it's going to be also quite mentally challenging because, you know, we're all going to have a few guys backed and, you know, they're going to be making bogeys and doubles and you hope they don't make triples, but it's going to be a bit of an emotional roller coaster. There'll be no player that gets through this week unscathed or without wobbly points or multiple wobbly points. So I guess you can't really ask for much more entertainment than that. So just hope you come out with a bit of profit at the end of the week. And if you have a chance to get the winner, amazing.
Just a couple more points and then we'll close it down. Clearly, our main US Open podcast will be out at the start of next week where we'll go through all of our picks for the week, Barry's, Paul's and myself's. 97, Davis Love, the third one here. And in 2006, as we said, it was Jeff Ogilvie. Now, Love won at 11 under. Ogilvie won the US Open at 5 over. If you just take the skit, I mean, we're talking a long time ago. With the course has been renovated since, but it's just worth looking at. I just took the two wins, what the guys did well, and you know, just had a look at those numbers. Skill averages, driving distance, they averaged fourth in distance off the tee. Ogilvie was sixth, and Davis Love, the week he won, was first for driving distance. So fourth for driving distance, 21st for accuracy, 13th for greening regulation, fifth for scrambling. There's a surprise. Davis Love was fourth for scrambling when he won the PGA, and Ogilvie was fifth. He actually scrambled at 70%, which is amazing at a US Open, that difficult. Putting average 18th, so it's not a putting contest, it's just basically, you know, missing or trying to not make doubles and bogeys, just keep par golf. But these numbers grabbed me as well. Third for total driving on the week, fourth for ball striking, and of course, second for all round. I mean, that's stating the obvious, and it's kind of close to what you said at the top, isn't it? It's basically we need all-rounders, and someone that's going to play the best all-round golf on the week, guess what? They'll win the tournament. Those statistics certainly back that up. Other thing I quickly looked at, correlating course form. Now, the last three winners here have been Fuzzy Zeller in 84, Davis Love and Jeff Ogilvie. And what courses on the PGA Tour do those guys all have had success at? And this is a short list. I urge you to just look into it in a bit more detail if you've got time. Courses I noticed where that these guys kind of have had good results together. Kapalua, where they played a tournament of champions over in Hawaii in January. Torrey Pines. That probably won't surprise you because, of course, Torrey Pines features Poana Greens, as does Pebble Beach. They've all had success there. Fuzzy Zeller won at Pebble Beach. Davis Love III is a two-time winner at Pebble Beach. And we've got Ogilvie having some success there as well. Riviera is another. That, again, features Poana Greens in Los Angeles. Then we've got Bay Hill. Augusta National, Zeller a winner. Love III, two top fives there. Jeff Ogilvie and four top tens. And Jeff Ogilvie's had a fourth at Augusta National. Interesting that those greens at Augusta National, it is mentioned that the undulations, the pitch, the creativity you need on those greens are similar. The only other course similar to this would be Augusta National. And there you go. You've got three guys there with excellent finishes at Augusta National. Other courses like Colonial, Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus's golf course, and TPC Summerlin, which I found interesting. That's where they play the Shriners every year. Fuzzy Zeller won there in Las Vegas. Davis Love has won there. And Jeff Ogilvie's had a top four finish at TPC Summerlin. So if you've got nothing else better to do, just do some course research and you might find players that can tick a lot of those course boxes in terms of where they've done well in the past. I'll tell you where I'm at, Barry. I am looking for players who are driving the ball right now extremely well. That's exactly where I'm at. And actually, when we've had pretty much the top 30 players in the world playing the Tour Championship last week, it's quite easy to look at that tournament and kind of see what skill sets were working for those players that week in Atlanta and take that as a base. That's kind of where I'm at with this.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we've got a few bets on already. I know I have. I think you've got a couple of anti-posts on. We won't mention too many other names. We can save that for the pod on Monday.
Absolutely.
Get stuck in. But I think there's a lot of stuff that we were saying today that's kind of backed up the initial, itchy trigger finger that I had on a couple of bets. And, you know, a few things you've talked about today and we're kind of fleshing out in the conversation that makes me feel a little bit better about them or a bit more confident in them than I was maybe like fired off punts. So
look, I take it you're playing some golf over the weekend. You can just kind of mull over some players as you're playing over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. It's round one of our captain's prize this weekend. So that's in line for me tomorrow. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they've let the rough grow a little bit in the last few days. But how fast they try to get the greens. It is September in Ireland, so the element of control isn't quite as much there as it will be for the guys in Winged Foot next week. But I'll probably be focusing on my own game a little bit more than the US Open just for the few hours tomorrow.
One thing to point out before we go, we're recording this Friday afternoon over here. Well, I'm in the UK and Barry's in the Republic of Ireland. Paddy Power have already launched their US Open market and it features 10 places each way next week for the US Open. So Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook are already 10 places each way, a 50 odds for the 2020 US Open next week. So go and pay them a visit if you're looking for some each way action next week. I think that's about it, Barry.
That's good. Yeah. Let's wrap it up and get to the weekend. And
absolutely.
See if there's any moments of inspiration hit us before Monday's pod.
We will be back, yes. Either Monday or early Tuesday morning. We'll be releasing the podcast next Tuesday. So we'll go through in more detail our full selections for the US Open at Wingfoot next week. Well, Barry, thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's always fun to be on. You know, if any listeners have any thoughts on the course or who might suit it, send us tweets.
Absolutely. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. I'm at Bamford Golf. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week. Thank you and goodbye.